is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95 The One and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Andy Beham, and jealously sitting alongside my co-hosts Dave Vesladol and Hayes Scriven, as they are returning from the Governor's Fishing Opener, and I had to cancel last minute due to some circumstances beyond my control, so this is going to be a tough show to record. I'm going to have to sit and hear all the things I missed out on, but no, it's always next year.
Hey, Andy, yes, you did miss out on a lot of stuff. It was a great event. We had a ball.
Well, Andy, you didn't miss out on all of Dave's interesting facts again that he had to try and fulfill me with because I've been gone. You know, he's always trying to get me caught up, and I keep telling him, Dave, I don't care.
No. No, did you guys...
Deep down, he cares. he was like a sponge.
Did you guys drive down to Wilmer together, or did you meet there?
No, we met there.
Okay, so it wasn't like the pheasant opener where you got to hear about it for the entire 3-hour drive.
No.
Okay.
No. No.
That's why you didn't meet up with me someplace. Okay.
I kind of figured a 4-hour drive down from Two Harbors and then another 3-hour drive to Wilmer would be a little extravagant when I could just go 4 hours to Wilmer from there. So.
But you did miss out on some stuff, Hayes.
And here
I always did.
Here I thought it was jealousy from when we went to the pheasant opener, and I hopped out of my car nice and refreshed, and you looked like you'd just been put through the ringer for 3 hours.
Oh, you guys.
Might have had something to do with it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm assuming you guys had a blast and were able to talk with a bunch of people, but just what's a brief take on the event?
From my perspective, we got there on Thursday night, and it was a good thing we did because we had to be up early Friday morning. But hats off not only to the people at the state level, but especially to the Wilmer-Spicer area. They did an excellent job putting this together. I know there was a lot of nervousness with, will the ice be off?
Yeah, you know, we've been watching that closely.
On the lake and stuff. But Hayes, they said they had about, 400 volunteers that worked to put this on in the area?
Yeah, they kept saying around 400, so it could have been even more than that. But, you know, everything, at least from our point of view, went off really smooth. Like, there was really no hiccups from a media attendee type of position, and everything was really smooth. Everything was there when they said it was going to be there. It was just really well put together, and the weather cooperated. I'd say 98% of the time there was that Rock and Robin concert that they were doing on Friday night. That it kind of rained a little bit, and I think it kept some people away, but still there was a ton of people that came out for that. So it was a all-around good time.
And it's very easily to be impressed with the Wilmer area. Wilmer, I don't know, is probably the size of 7,000-8,000 people, and then you got some of the smaller surrounding communities. But what that community does with its parks and its different areas, they have an area very similar to our rodeo site. That almost kind of the same configuration, and they're using that, it sounds like, all the time. They have a number of band concerts down there and stuff, so it's a pretty impressive community. You get talking with people, they're very proud of their community, and what they do with probably not a lot of funding is pretty amazing.
Well, and that's what these events are for, is to help these communities showcase what they have to offer.
Yep.
And bring people like us, well, you guys, not us, unfortunately, in, and you're able to spread the word on it. But there's so much that goes on behind the scenes to prepare for an event like this. I know. Well, why don't we go ahead and take a listen? You guys were able to catch up with Beth Fisher, the event director for the Governor's Fishing Opener. And, you know, she got into kind of what goes into the planning for this. So let's take a listen to that, and we'll be right back with you.
Hayes and Dave with Northfield Outdoors. We now have the opportunity to talk with Beth Fisher. She's the event director here of the 2018 Minnesota Governor's Fishing Opener here in Wilmer/Spicer. Good morning, Beth.
Good morning.
Beth, as the event director, I'm sure there hasn't been any pressure. This has been just everything that's just fallen right together. Can you just take a few minutes and talk about what it was to pull this event together here in Wilmer and what it means to Wilmer?
Well, first, it means a lot to have us, to be able to have all of you guys here in our community, broadcasting really, you know, about telling a little bit about our area. We feel blessed to be able to have it here. It is a huge undertaking we've been planning for the last 18 months, since we found out that we were going to have it. I have a great planning team, and, you know, we have 13 different committees, about 400 volunteers working really hard to be able to put on a great event.
Where did you come up with 400 volunteers? You must have been out there shaking the bushes to get them. Or did people really just step up and say, hey, I want to be part of this?
We have a wonderful community. The Wilmer Lakes area is all of Kennyway County. And, of course, we're featuring our three largest communities, Wilmer, Spicer, and New London. And people are just coming. They want to help. They want to be involved. A lot of community pride. And so they really just stepped up to be able to help.
Now, I see you are raffling off a boat. Is that part of the fundraiser to offset some of the costs for putting this on?
Yeah, we are. It's a $30,000 package donated from Tracker Boating Center out of Forest Lake. And, yeah, it is our largest fundraiser to help put on the event. So, first place, Tracker Boat.
Now, I brought along a 2-inch ball for me to pull that back. I assume that's what I'll need. Is that correct?
Yep, that's it. All you got to do is buy your raffle ticket.
Hey, we've been talking with Beth Fisher, the event director here in the Wilmer Spicer area. Thank you for taking the time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, Andy and Hayes, as we listen to Beth talk, and Beth is the Convention and Visitor Bureau event director. And any community that's planning on hosting something like this, obviously there's a ton of work that goes into it, and you need someone like this, Beth. Although she seemed very relaxed when we were talking with her, I can't imagine what the last year and a half has been for her in starting to put this all together and stuff.
Well, yeah, it's, I don't know, when does the community find out? I know next year they announced it's in Albert Lee. Has Albert Lee known this for a while? Or
my understanding, I understood, Hayes, that they found out several months ago that they...
No. What they did is you apply 6 months before the opening.
Oh, that's right. Okay. You're correct.
So you have one year to prepare.
Yeah, but you're...
So you apply, and then they give the award at the... they might have told them, like, you're down to the final two.
make sure you're here.
You know, yeah, make sure you're there. And then they make the award that night, because it seemed like the guy was pretty excited. Like, he didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
If we want to get the real scoop, we could probably call some of our friends.
No, I think you're absolutely right. The half year before is the application process and pulling that all together.
Well,
and then hoping that you get drawn.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a busy year, and I know it's worth it being able to highlight the community that way. And, I mean, they get help on the state level, too, not just local. Yeah. You guys were able to catch up with John Edmond, the CEO and director of Explore Minnesota, who obviously has a lot to do with these events also.
He does, but after talking with him, it was interesting. He really pushed back that it was really the community that does all the work. Yes, they offer some guidance. They make the selection and stuff, but and I'm sure they're... At his level, there's a lot of work that goes into
it. Well, and just Explore Minnesota, not him in general, but Explore Minnesota in general is putting a lot into this. And they will obviously be humble and let the local community take all the credit.
But Hayes, I don't know about you, but one thing in talking with these two people, they were getting across the point that it's not just getting people there for the fishing opener. It's getting people to know the area, getting to know the Wilmer-Spicer area in hopes to come back. And some of the tours that we took, Hayes, I found a couple of interesting places that, yeah, I think I may go back to Wilmer.
Yeah.
The Spicer Castle
great. That Spicer Castle is amazing. I had no idea that was even there, and the food was amazing. And I just... And I'm glad you brought this up, because the one thing for me, whenever I thought of Wilmer before, you know, and I've been there once, but my preconceived notion of Wilmer was it's just kind of the start of the prairie and it's big flat area. No, it's completely not. There's a ton of lakes there. There's the northern half of the county is, you know, full of woods and, you know, great place. And then the southern half, yeah, is a little bit flatter, more dirt, you know, for farming and stuff. But the fishing was amazing, and the outdoor opportunity that's in that county in that area, way more than I expected. I would definitely go back to Wilmer and actually fish and spend some time there. I had no idea it was the way it was.
Yeah, my experience with Willmar, I think I've been there once or twice, and that was just for hockey tournaments. And all I remember of Willmar is, God, it's hard to find that ice arena. Now, I'll definitely go back there. You know, we talked about the Spicer Castle. That's a it's a beautiful building right on Green Lake. It's a bed and breakfast place. It was a former residence of a railroad baron. And now they rent out rooms and some cabins, and they do the murder mysteries. Yeah. But there's also some other great spots just to stop in there. And again, hats off to Willmar. They've got a nice convention center for greeting people. Surprising how nice and big it is, you know, for a small town. Parks are large and well used. We had a nice time on Friday night when the governor spoke and Amy Klobuchar spoke.
All right. Well, yeah, let's go ahead and take a listen to the interview with John Edmond from Explore Minnesota and get a little insight into statewide what goes into planning something like the fishing opener. And when we get back, we can pick up where you guys started off on Friday morning and go from there. Let's take a listen.
We are back with Hayes and Dave on Northfield Outdoors. We have grabbed John Edmond. He's Explore Minnesota, the CEO and director for Explore Minnesota. And so, good morning, John.
Good morning. Thank you for being here.
John, can you take a minute or two and just give us a little bit of the history of the 20, you know, we're at the 2018 Governor's Fishing Opener. How long have these fishing openers been going on, and why have they been going on?
People don't realize how long the Governor's Fishing Opener has been going on in Minnesota. This is our 71st Governor's Fishing Opener. And every year they keep getting bigger and bigger. We do it because we not only want to celebrate and promote fishing, but it's also the start of our tourism season. Right now it's actually Tourism Week in the entire country, and we're celebrating the importance of travel and tourism in Minnesota. It's a $15 billion industry, and fishing and the outdoors is really a big part of it.
What does it mean to a town like Willmar and Spicer to actually be able to host something like this?
They've been working on this for almost a year and a half, trying to promote the community, to promote fishing, and what they get out of it is an incredible promotion and media value. I think last year in St. Cloud, it was over $1 million in terms of the media value that they got from this. This is stuff that they couldn't afford to do on their own. They're very proud of this community. They're proud of the natural resources and the fishing and all the other recreational and business opportunities they have. And this is their way to really elevate that in ways they just couldn't do it on their own.
What type of staff does it take at a state level to put this together, and where does some of the money come from to put this together?
Well, it really starts with the community. They're the ones, I mean, to get a fishing opener, it's a bid process. A community has to raise their hand and say, I want to do this, and I'm going to do all of the fundraising and stuff like that. So all of the money that goes on to this, all the dozens and dozens of sponsors in this community, they do a raffle of a boat. That's where the money comes from. From Explore Minnesota, we really have one or two people that are involved. Our regional manager and our PR manager are really the two people that are most involved with it. But and the reason I only mention that in responding to your question, it's really the community. We just assist them in their work in putting this event on.
To me, it sounds like you're being a little kind. It must be a big burden on your part to put something like this together, working with the communities. There's got to be, everybody's wants their little piece of you, I would think.
No, actually, I consider it an incredible opportunity. You know, I don't see it a burden at all, because even for me, talking to you and talking to all the media that are here, I can get my message out about travel and tourism in the state that we couldn't do on our own. So it's not a burden; it's an incredible opportunity. And I'm not being humble. That's just the truth of the matter. This is really great for everybody involved.
Well, it looks like we're going to have a great weekend. The rain's going to hold off for us. We've been talking with John Edmond, Explore Minnesota CEO and director. Hey, thank you for taking the time this morning.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thanks for being here.
Okay, we are back. Hayes, let's talk a little bit about Friday morning, Media Day. Your impressions on the organization and how it was set up?
Well, it was set up pretty well, I thought. There was,
yes.
I don't know how many radio stations there were there, probably 20 or so.
Yeah, I wonder if it wasn't even more than that were actually broadcasting live.
Yeah,
it was
a lot of a lot were broadcasting. We had our own table that we sat at and had nice space to, you know, they kept people moving through. The ones that had to be on the live shows were a little bit more stringent on their time. But it was definitely a pretty well-oiled machine, and got to chat with everybody that we needed to chat to. And it was just really kind of cool to see how all these other stations take in the fishing opener and report it back.
It was always fun watching the people with the clipboards keeping it organized and keeping it moving. Nope, you need to be here now. That was nice.
And those people really nice. With the clipboards were able to get a couple good interviews your way, too.
Yes, yeah, we were real happy with that.
I know you started out with Don Pereira, the DNR fisheries chief, so who better to talk to at the fishing opener, right?
Right. Before we go into that interview, my main question that we wanted to ask him about was about muskies. I've been doing a little bit of reading about some of the issues around reintroducing muskies back into a lot of lakes around Minnesota. And there's some sportsmen's groups and there's some people not very happy about it. So we really wanted to go to the main source and find out what is the science behind this and what is his thoughts behind the reintroduction and stocking of muskies in some lakes.
Yeah, I know a lot of people think you throw muskies in there, they're going to eat all the other fish you want to catch. But
yeah, that's not the case.
Well, let's take a listen to somebody who knows more than us. It's Don Pereira, the DNR Fisheries Chief. Let's take a listen.
Good morning. We are back here alongside Green Lake at the 2018 Governor's Fishing Opener. This is Hayes and Dave on Northfield Outdoors. And we are lucky enough to have with us the DNR Fisheries Chief, Don
Pereira.
Pereira. Hey, I think I got it close. Don, can you take just a moment and explain what, as a DNR Fisheries Chief, what does that all cover? What are your responsibilities here in the state of Minnesota?
Well, as you know, fishing is a huge part of Minnesota culture, and that's based in large part on the fact that we have an enormous aquatic resource. We manage fishing in about 5,000 lakes around the state and about 16,000 miles of rivers and streams. So it's a big program. We provide a service for about 1.3 million anglers, and sport fishing in Minnesota contributes over $4 billion to the state economy as well.
Does a stocking program, does that fall under your area of responsibility?
Correct. Anything to do with managing fish in public waters falls under the domain of the section of fisheries, basically.
I'd like to take a minute and talk about muskies. Now, there's been, a stocking program in some lakes around Minnesota. What I've read and what I've heard, some people are very pro-stocking muskies, some not so much. Can you explain the program a little bit and also explain why some people may not be supporting that?
Sure. Our muskie program is founded on a really good good basic understanding of the biology of muskellunge. And we manage them very conservatively. People have this misperception that it's this big fish that's going to eat everything, and they don't really understand the dynamics of large fish very well. So that's kind of where the misunderstanding comes from. There's animosity that goes way, way back in time to when the dark house guys would be sparing for northern pike and the muskie guys blame them for killing muskellunge. And the muskie guys, to their credit, have said, okay, northern pike spearing is not a detriment to muskie fishing. Let's go ahead and lift the dark house bans. So the public animosity, that should have gone away, and it's still here basically because of misinformation, sadly. We manage muskellunge so at really low densities, lower densities than a lot of other states. We target only one adult per 4 to 10 surface acres of water. A lot of our prime muskie waters are much lower density than that. Mille Lacs is a really good example. We have one adult per 50 surface acres of water in Mille Lacs. So the predatory impact of muskellunge in all of our lakes is really, really small compared to what even the walleyes and the pike and the bass are already doing. And we're very, very confident that we have not damaged any local fish communities at all by introducing muskellunge. It is a trophy fish. And our philosophy in Minnesota for fish management is to provide a diversity of fishing experience, both numbers of species and maybe some trophy fishing. We're trying to change northern pike management around the state to provide more pike for harvest, not about trophy fishing. So our muskie management program is very, very sound.
That is about the best explanation I have heard. I got to carry this recording around with some of my buddies and let them hear this. Don, are you going to be able to get out and get a little fishing this weekend?
Yeah, I'll be out here right on Green Lake tomorrow morning for sure.
And do you know the secret spot that we should follow you? Or?
Well, I am with the local area manager, Dave Coran. I'll be in his boat, so he probably knows the secret spot.
Okay, Hayes, we gotta watch that. Thank you again. We've been speaking with Don Pereira, the DNR Fisheries Chief. Thank you again for your time.
You're very welcome.
We are back again. Hey, Andy, let's go ahead and take a short break, and let's hear from our sponsor.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Dave Vespladol. I'm being interviewed by Andy Beham, and on special assignment, who went out to the 2018 Minnesota Governor's Fishing Opener along with me, is Hayes Scriven, all the way from Two Harbors.
Well, Dave, you guys sat down with the DNR Fisheries Chief to talk muskies. Were you educated?
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, he gave an excellent reasons behind that. And part of me wants to almost keep that little recording in my pocket because I got a couple of buddies that don't like to see muskies always reintroduced back into some lakes. And I
they're
said,
just
well,
mad
here,
they
listen
can't
to the reason
them.
Why. No, that was a lot of good information there.
Yeah, it's easy to think of fish of that size as just going around terrorizing a lake, but that's not the case.
No. I think it's a good idea. It's a good idea.
Well, and after you guys were sat down with him, you were also able to sit down with the DNR commissioner and talk some Northerns, talk some other changes in laws. And, it was it Tom Landwehr?
Tom is a great interview because you throw a question in front of him, he talks.
Yeah. Now, that name sounds familiar. Did we see him at the Pheasant Opener?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. We had talked to him at the Pheasant Opener. And
he actually remembered us.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, he wouldn't.
Yeah. Did he mention that I wasn't there? He was surprised by that?
Yes. He was very, very distraught that you weren't there.
Yes. I hope he slept at night.
I think the way he said it, oh, they did send the two looking guys, but what about that other guy? What was his name?
What happened to the other guy?
Yeah. The other guy. Yeah.
No, Tom was pretty good. So we did an interview with him. And then Hayes also did a video interview that if you go to Northfield Outdoors, you also see some great information from him.
Yeah. Check it out on the Facebook page. We asked him kind of similar questions. And then I threw in a couple musky questions for myself and some questions about Lake Mille Lacs because that's kind of the stuff I hear up here. I wanted to prod his brain on that a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. Make sure you go and check out our Facebook page. There's a lot of bonus material from the fishing opener out there and some extra interviews. You can learn how to fillet a northern, all kinds of good stuff out there.
Oh,
so make sure and check that out.
Yeah, and we posted a number of pictures. You got to remember, at the governor's opener, we had not only the governor, but we had Amy Klobuchar there. She spoke. We had Colin Peterson there, the 7th District Representative there. And then the state representative and the state senator, they were also there. So anybody who was anybody, except for Andy, was there.
Thanks for continuously pointing that out.
Getting back to the more important thing, the guy that was filleting those Northerns, that was impressive.
Yep.
The way he was doing that. And granted, the one that we watched, it was a pretty big Northern, so it was easy for him to cut the back strap off and a few other segments on it, but that was, if you want to see a way to fillet a northern and keep the bones out of there, that is the way to do it.
Yeah.
And I also know, I think it's on the, it might be on the DNR Fisheries Facebook page where they've got an expanded, more edited version of that same video, but it's absolutely amazing if you want to go check that out.
So, Andy, why don't we go ahead and listen to our interview with the DNR commissioner. We basically asked him two questions, one about the new northern
regulations that went into effect this year, and people really need to be aware about that. And then about Sophie's Law that went into effect this year.
Yeah, let's take a listen.
Well, good morning. We're back at the 2018 Governor's Fishing Opener here right on the shores of Green Lake. This is Hayes and Dave. Hayes, I'm still giving you first ground here. We have Tom Landwehr with us. He is the DNR Commissioner of Minnesota, and we had the opportunity at the Governor's Pheasant Opener to talk to him, so we're lucky to get you back here again. You probably have one of the toughest jobs in the state of Minnesota.
It seems like everybody has opinions about the things that we work with. I mean, we work with public resources, right, and they belong to everybody. So everybody's got entitled to an opinion. Everybody does have an opinion, and they oftentimes are not all on the same page.
Well, if you want opinions, just ask a fisherman. they have opinions. Talk about opinions. I understand we've changed the northern regulations this year. Perhaps you can spend a little time as to why we changed them, and has it been unanimous, people like it, or has there been some pushback on it?
So I think, you know, going back a ways on northerns, I think what we have heard over the years is that people would like to catch big northerns, you know, 30-inch, 36-inch northerns. And yet in so many places in Minnesota, all they catch is hammer handle, what you call a hammer handle, you know, one-pound, 18-inch northern. And why can't we have a higher quality northern fishery? Well, the work that we did shows that, you know, people will keep the bigger ones, you know, the 30-inchers, and they'll throw back all the smaller ones. The problem with that is that it tends to exacerbate that problem. You end up with a lot more little ones, and the little ones eat so much food that you don't get a chance for the big ones to thrive. And so we looked at how to fix that. And you can't look at one regulation for all of Minnesota, because the lakes are all so different. So you think of northeastern Minnesota, you think of those hard water lakes, those clear lakes in the forest, very clean water, much different than central Minnesota, where there's more productivity, there's more other fish species available, much different than southern Minnesota, where you've got very high fertile water, you know, and a lot of food in there for fish. And so when we looked at what to do, we knew we had to put more pressure on the little fish, the little northerns. We had to encourage people to take the smaller fish such that the bigger fish could thrive and pass their genes on and so on. And so we implemented this new regulation. It divides the state into three zones, and there's a different limit and different slots for each part of the state, all intended to increase that number of big northerns that are out there and give people that better quality fish that they want.
Can you take just a minute and explain how you came about the three different zones? I'm assuming you just didn't look at a map and throw a few darts and do it this way. There must have been some science behind this.
Absolutely, and it's based on those things that I mentioned earlier. So the lakes are very different, and we do lake surveys all across the state, not just in terms of finding out what's in there for fish species, but also to look at the water chemistry, to look at the water clarity, to look at the fertility of the water. And it was based on those characteristics, which then contribute to the growth and the abundance of fish. Based on those characteristics, we came up with those three zones. So you think of the northeastern part of the state, it's not sterile water, but it's very low productivity. Think of the central part of the state, again, more productivity and a lot of lakes, versus the southern part of the state, where it's very, very high productivity and not a lot of lakes. And so it's just the nature of the lakes that creates those zones.
One other new law that I believe is going into effect this year is called Sophie's Law. Could you take a minute and explain what that is and why this went into effect?
You bet. And it's based on a little girl by the name of Sophie who died in a boat, in her parents' boat. A lot of the sort of cabin cruisers, a lot of larger boats, they have an enclosed cabin. And what people don't realize is that when you're running a boat, you're generating exhaust, and in some cases that exhaust, the turbulence of the boat brings that exhaust back into the cabin. And what happened in that particular tragic case was the carbon monoxide built up in the cabin of the boat. Sophie died of carbon monoxide poisoning. Sophie's parents, in their tragedy, said, let's make sure this doesn't happen to another child, went to the legislature, passed a law that requires all boats, I think it's over 21 feet, to have a carbon monoxide detector in their boat. And the law actually passed, I think it was 2 years ago. What we found out is that there were no manufacturers of a battery-powered carbon monoxide detector that would work in a boat. So there was a delay in the implementation, but it takes effect this year, that you need to have that carbon monoxide detector in that cabin of that boat if you have the boat that meets those criteria.
Great. Thank you. That's a good explanation. And I think it's important for people to understand what some of these new laws and regulations are.
Exactly. It's not just a nuisance law. It's really intended to protect people. And it's, you know, the driver of the boat's always outside. So it's really intended to protect those passengers of yours that are in the cabin that may not even realize, because it's a odorless gas, that they may be exposed to carbon monoxide. Every year we have people die from carbon monoxide poisoning in ice houses, you know, sometimes in hunting shacks, and not infrequently in boats. And this is just intended to make sure that is reduced.
Well, we've been talking with Tom Landwehr, the DNR Commissioner of Minnesota, and we really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you guys for being here, and good fishing to everybody who gets out.
Thanks again.
All right, welcome back. That was Tom Landwehr, the DNR Commissioner for the state of Minnesota.
And one more thing I want to say about Tom. He's a genuinely nice guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was taking the time, and we saw him out and about on Friday night and stuff, and he's got a tough job. Everybody's got their opinion, or if you fish, you think your opinion's the correct opinion, of course. And I don't know what you thought, Hayes, but I thought he was very nice and very good listening to people, just watching him kind of work the crowd.
Oh, yeah, he was just a guy. You know, he just happens to be the DNR commissioner, and he gets, like you said, he gets opinions from everybody.
Yes.
How his job should be done. So, well, no, I think he's doing a great job with that.
It'd be nice to see if the new regulations on Northerns can, you know, accomplish what they're setting out to do and start getting some more trophy Northerns out there. And
you know, I after listening to them, I think it's a good thing. I think they're moving in the right direction.
And, you know, Sophie's Law, how can you argue with that?
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's amazing, these tragedies. It's always, you know, it's heartbreaking, but at least when you see it turn into a positive, you know.
But I think it's important for people to be aware that that did go into effect this year.
Yep. So, yeah, go out and make sure you're aware of the new changes to the Northern regulations, and make sure you check and see if your boat falls under Sophie's Law and you need to get a carbon monoxide detector on there. So check it out. Well, that brings us to the point where you guys were done with the interviews.
Yeah, Hayes and I had the chance then and we talked a little bit about this already, but to find out more about the Willmar area. They offered a lot of different tours to do a lot of different things, and being Hayes is the historical expert here amongst the team, we went on one of the more of the history tours. Is that how you would call it, Hayes?
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed with the area. I learned a lot about the area that I had never realized.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I got to see a friend of mine, Jill, who runs the county museum there in Candiola County, and she does a great job with her facility and her programming. So, kudos to her. And then our guide did a great job showing us the couple of the churches out there that were just amazing. And I think I posted some on the Facebook page, and then if I didn't, they're on my personal Instagram account that people can go and look for me under Minnesota History Geek 66.
I was going to say, now Jill is she's a director of a museum compared to just a history geek like you, right?
Yeah, and we explain how that all goes in the video, so you can see who has a higher opinion of their job than somebody else. But Jill is a director, and I'm just a history geek, so. Jill likes the title, that title, better than I like my title. So.
And more importantly, we had some great food at lunch also.
Oh, my gosh.
We stopped at the Spicer Castle for a little tour there, and that's where they fed us. Actually, we had great food
all weekend.
Yeah, all weekend.
Well, then after touring the area and kind of checking out, did you guys have a banquet then on Friday night?
Well, Friday night is where they hosted down at the park
okay.
in Willmar, and that's where the governor and Amy Klobuchar and all the rest spoke, and they did a really nice job down there.
Yeah,
putting that together. We got to look at some boats that Hayes and I were talking about. Well, that's a nice one that I'd like to hook to the back of my truck and bring home,
along with the payments.
Tracker was down there.
Yeah,
and there were a number of sponsors and manufacturers down there.
But it nice.
It was a lot of fun, and then we got to meet our guides then for fishing on Saturday. And just so everyone understands how this works, it's up to the community who's hosting the Governor's Opener. They need to come up with guides and boats to take all of us interesting media people out fishing. And we were extremely lucky.
And there's quite a few of them. I mean, you may not know about all these people that aren't as big of a deal as we are, but there's a lot of people there.
Yes, there is.
Well, and to organize all of that, it can't be easy. I know you guys...
No.
Well, why don't we take a listen? You guys caught up with Dean Anfinson, who was the fishing host, one of the co-chairs that had to organize all the hosts.
Yeah, it was.
What did he say? 300 hosts? Something around that.
This guy had a tough job finding guides and people with fishing boats to take everybody out, and he did it.
Yeah,
and stuff. But I can't imagine trying to pull that off. And
Well, let's take a listen to what Dean has to say about organizing for you guys to get up on Saturday morning and go out fishing.
Yes.
All right.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Hayes and Dave at the 2018 fishing opener, the Governor's Fishing Opener, and we are looking out over, this is Green Lake that we're looking out over here, is that correct?
This is Green Lake.
Okay. We are at the right spot. So this morning we are going to talk with Dean Anfinson. I believe I got the name correctly. He's the fishing host co-chair. Good morning.
Good morning.
Dean, just real quickly, as a fishing host co-chair, sounds like you are like the most important person here as far as if anybody wants to go fishing.
Well, I suppose it depends on who you talk to, but yes, we were tasked with finding 110 boat hosts and matching those 110 boat hosts up with approximately 350 guests.
Oh, wow, 350 people are going to put out on the water. Are these all local guides, local boats that you're bringing in here?
You know, probably 70% of them are all local people, and then there's about, you know, 30% that kind of follow this around from area to area through the year. This has become their tradition. They follow the Governor's Fishing Opener around and volunteer each year.
And why would I want to volunteer my boat and my time to get out here on the water? Is it just that it's a lot of fun, or are there some other perks involved?
Well, it's giving back to the area. It's giving back to the community. You know, areas like this, we make our living. A lot of us make our living on the outdoors and entertainment and fishing and hunting. And without events like this and the great media it gives us, it really pushes a lot to our area and gives a nice spotlight on our Wilmer Lakes area.
So I assume Hayes and myself are going out tomorrow morning. You've lined us up with a guy that will guarantee us several walleye?
Sure. No. We're, you know, with the weather, how it is, I think the fishing is going to be good. You know, the lake turned on. I've talked to quite a few of the guys that have been out marking fish. I think it's going to be a good opener. I really do.
It's got to be a good feeling, all the work that you've put into this. All of a sudden, it's kind of coming to an end here, or I shouldn't say necessarily an end, but it looks like we're going to have a great day on Saturday out there fishing.
It looks like it. It has been a lot of work. You know, we've obviously been keeping our eye on Mother Nature for more reasons than tomorrow. We spent the last 3 months hoping the ice comes off, hoping for good weather, hoping people can get their boats out of the storage sheds to make it here. We did have a few people cancel because of that. You know, we don't have all of our docks and lifts in and that type of thing because of the late ice off. The water's a little colder than usual, but Green Lake never really heats up that fast.
Well, thank you, Dean. I appreciate you taking some time. I know you're pretty busy. I see you running from spot to spot around here, but we really do appreciate all the work that you put into this. Thank you.
And thank you.
All right, welcome back. As you hear that, just to get these knuckleheads out on the lake wasn't easy, but hopefully it was well worth it. As we dive into the tales of fishing. I'm sure it will be. But
well, first, I want to give kudos to, we actually had two guides. So it was just Hayes and myself in the boat with Steve Launders and Tim Pollock. Did I get yep. Hayes? Did I get his last name correctly? Yep. Mm-hmm. Two of the greatest guys in Wilmer. they really were. They were very gracious. Tim had a great boat, great fishing boat.
Oh my God.
That was set up nice. We were spoilt in that one. But
yeah, I know you put the video of them launching it Saturday morning, yeah. And one more thing, making me jealous that I wasn't there.
But
those two guys. Just amazing, and I think, you know, to use the term guide, you know, they're not professional guiders. They're just two guys that really like to fish a lot, and
you know, and they have Tim, a boat,
and they have a boat. But Tim knew that lake. He could guide on that lake. He knew that lake really well, and so did Steve. They both know that lake really well, and that all the area lakes just immensely well. And to have both of them, we were definitely spoiled.
We were trolling over this area, and he goes, "Okay, you know, there's a tree down there, but we always get snagged on and stuff." And sure enough, I mean, he knew every rock and every tree. But the other part about that is they also could talk about the area.
Yeah,
and they were a wealth of information.
Well, and I saw that he proved to you a couple minutes into your outing that there were fish in the lake.
Okay, as I said to Hayes, we weren't in. How long
did
were
you check to make sure it wasn't on the on his line before he launched the boat?
Literally, it was like, it, 5 minutes.
It had to have been 5 minutes. Yeah, it had to have been 5 minutes on the water. And his, but the thing is, his pole wasn't in the water more than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, that's how quick it was.
So you guys are feeling all kinds of hopeful as he pulls that walleye.
Oh, yeah. Just suspicion. Yeah. Okay. Did Steve hook that on the line for Tim before when our backs were turned? No, it was a tough day of fishing out there. You know, they just had ice out and stuff, but you know, we did catch some fish.
You caught a varmint.
Well,
a whisker trout.
Yes, it's one of the. It's a rare fish.
It's a rare fish.
It's a difficult one.
One that big, I've never seen one that big actually. So yeah, it probably was pretty rare.
And it was near trophy size. Yeah.
Well, Dave, do you want to tell people what you actually got? This gourmet fish. You haven't said the words of what it is.
I don't know. Gosh, look at the time. No, I managed to pull in a bullhead. And, it was a nice bullhead.
Were you trying to catch walleye with chicken liver again?
Well, don't you just, the bigger the bait, the bigger the chance.
There you go.
No, it was pretty fun. I caught a little grief on that one.
Yeah.
It was funny because Tim goes to net him. Tim goes to David. He goes, "You're on your own."
And I wasn't
even. I'm not even going to net it.
Yeah.
When he said that, and I hadn't seen the fish yet, and I'm thinking, is it that big? You know, I thought maybe it was a big northern, and then I kind of could get to the point where I could see it.
They'll put up a little bit of a fight. And it'll feel like a bigger fish than it is.
Are you kidding me? A bullhead. So, yeah.
Well, but Dave, the good thing, though, is at least you got the fish in the boat. Yeah. On the other hand, I had two decent-sized walleyes on the line, and I caught them in the boat. I was telling you this afterwards, too. I said, this is why I don't fish walleye, because I can't stand the fact that you think you have them, and then they're gone. I can't. It was a great experience. I actually learned more walleye fishing this trip than I've ever learned, which is awesome for me, because I normally fish bass or northern or muskie or something like that. But that was fun, and to see those size walleye on there was just, like, it makes me want to go do it more, but not so much that I really want to spend a lot of time going after them.
So you were able to see that they were walleye and the size of them, so you got them right up to the boat?
Yeah. And then, so one of them I didn't get to actually saw the white in the water. It had come up, and I saw him turn, and he spit the hook. The second time, I had him up, and I don't know what it was. We still haven't quite figured out what the heck happened with it, but I was using a bottom bouncer, and it was one of my older ones, and I'm guessing either the bottom bouncer somehow snapped and broke, or it somehow slipped out of my clip that I was using on the line, because the clip was still hooked, but it wasn't like everything was gone.
Yeah,
it had to have broke.
Yeah, which tells you the size of the fish. That was a good size walleye that was on the line there. And the other thing that I'm glossing over is that David got tangled up in my line on that same fish, so I had to stop and wait.
He said fish on, and I'm reeling in 100 miles an hour, and all of a sudden, Hayes is also reeling in 100 miles an hour.
Oh, no.
we did have some bites. It was a little tough. One of the other hosts on the boat, he caught a couple of nice bass. Of course, it wasn't bass season; had thrown back. But those are some pretty impressive bass.
Good bass.
Yep. Yeah. And I think if a guy was trying to fish bass, that would really be an interesting place to go.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, yeah. Now that we know that there's fish there, maybe we need to look into. Heading back down there.
Yeah.
This time maybe I can join you guys.
Northfield Outdoors boat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk to Jeff about that. I think it would be really good for the station as a whole.
You know,
I think it would too.
The other thing I want to pass on, Tim brought some of his venison sticks that he made.
Yeah.
So we had those out there in the boat. And those, Tim, if you're listening someplace, those were pretty darn good.
Yeah. Did you guys do the shore lunch on Saturday?
Well, yes. And we forgot to grab our lunch when we went out. Our box lunch. So we lived left off the venison sticks.
Off the venison sticks. I thought the shore lunch was that they were pulling up and like cooking fish up and everything.
If you were going to be over on Green Lake, you could have done that. We went to Long Lake.
Oh, okay.
And so then they made us box lunches.
Yeah. Andy, censor that out.
We'll edit that part out. All right. Well, then Saturday, you guys get back. Then they had the banquet Saturday night.
Yeah, they did. They had the big banquet. And Hayes, how many people do you think were at the banquet?
There had to have been 200 in that room.
Oh boy, maybe even more than that. It was a pretty big, but they did a great job. Food was excellent. We all had filet mignons. It was a nice setup and stuff.
Nice.
Didn't win the big boat that they raffled off.
I'm surprised.
Even though we sat with Tracker.
Yeah, we sat down with the Tracker people who donated the boat.
They couldn't have pulled some strings for you?
Well, we tried.
I thought they were.
we tried.
Then they heard that David won so much this year that they were afraid of moving his tax bracket on winnings alone.
The only thing I won was when we checked in, they gave you a scratch-off ticket, and so I won a whole $4.
We did win some money. On pull tabs.
Yeah, that's right. I'm forgetting about the pull tabs. We did win a few dollars on that.
You tried to donate some money from the local nonprofits, and instead you took it away from them.
Yeah, that pretty much.
Except it was
an effort by the both of us.
Yes.
Except the next day we tried again, and we should have quit while we were ahead because we ended up donating the money back to the nonprofits.
Well, it's good. You were a guest in their community, so it was nice of you to do.
Yeah.
And then was that pretty much the end of it then?
Yeah, it was a nice program that they had Saturday night. And then Sunday morning they had a breakfast for us. And then Hayes headed back to Harbors and I headed back here to Northfield. But it was a great event. It was well run. And my hats are off to them.
All right. Well, look forward to joining you fellas next year. And
maybe we invite you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. even if you don't, next year it's in Albert Lee. It's close enough. I'm going to come down and find you either way.
There you go.
But I don't know, Hayes, any other final thoughts on your part?
No, I just want to thank everybody for what they did down in Wilmer. They did a great job. I want to thank you, Dave, for coming along. Andy, thank you for doing your editing magic on the show here, because you're doing a great job with that. And it was just a really good time to go down and hang out with Wilmer and represent Northfield and the station. It was a lot of fun to do that. So I'm thankful for the opportunity you guys gave me to do that.
All right. Well, on that high note, let's bring it down a notch with a little bit of Dave's interesting facts.
Oh, man.
But thank you for the nice word, Hayes. Well, Dave's looking for those. I do appreciate it.
I have these memorized.
So we need to stall a little bit here?
No, we don't. I've got this all basically memorized. We'll see how much you two have been paying attention to about the Minnesota Governor's Fishing Opener. So this is an easy one. What year was the first governor's fishing opener in?
71 years ago.
Well, what year?
Do I need my calculator? I'm right.
Well, sort of.
Oh.
I'm trying 1947.
To there you go.
That was actually held in 1948.
Oh.
71 years ago would be 1947.
I know, but the official state says the actual first opener was in the year 1948.
So they did 2-1 year?
I'm not sure.
I just know one of our interviews, they said that it was the 71st.
Yep. And all
I don't
their
know, Dave.
I know. All their printed literature says 1948. So maybe the 1940s.
I feel like you're discrediting the interesting facts here, Dave.
Well, tell John Edmund and figure it out.
Yes.
Where was it held?
On a lake?
Well, you're close.
I'm going to say on the Mississippi River.
As usual.
Walker.
You are even incorrect. It's normal for Andy to be wrong. Well, relax. Where else would it be?
Where else?
Do you know that the first 10th governor's fishing opener were held in Mille Lacs?
I did know that. You never gave me a chance to answer.
Oh, okay. Well, who is the governor? Who is the governor proceeding over the first one?
I got nothing. Let's go to the history geek.
Come on. And we're going to put a little asterisk by this one, by the way.
Luther Youngdahl?
Wow, impressive. You are correct.
Attaboy.
Yeah. The only thing is, at the last minute, he couldn't make it to it.
Okay,
how about a few other little interesting facts? Do you know how warm was the warmest fishing opener on record?
86 degrees.
No, you're incorrect. I mean,
I knew that before I said a word.
So you're asking like what the temperature was?
Yes.
92 degrees.
You are correct. It was 92 degrees in 1987.
See,
I
was thinking in northern Minnesota, so I was right also.
It was St. Cloud.
Yeah, I was thinking up on like Lake Winnebagoche. So
okay.
Oh yeah.
Okay, I'll give you a second chance, Andy.
Oh, good.
How about the coldest fishing opener on record, and where was that at?
It was 18 degrees out.
No,
you were so wrong. 30 some degrees in McGregor.
No, and you are wrong also.
Somewhere in between.
Oh, damn it.
Yep. It was 24 degrees at International Falls twice in 1996 and 2004.
I was closer.
Well, not really.
I was closer geographically.
Because I never got to say. He just told me I was wrong first.
Okay. Now, Hayes, these next two, they said this more than once at some of our gatherings at the Governor's Fishing Opener. Yeah, so I'm going to see if you paid attention. Approximately how many number of license will be sold this year, fishing license, to anglers in Minnesota?
In-state or both?
In-state.
So anyone coming from Wisconsin buying an out-of-state license does not go towards this number?
That would be correct.
Okay. I just want to make sure you're not trying to trick me here. I'm going to...
Do,
480,000.
I was going to say 100,000.
Man, you...
I don't know.
Well, Hayes, shame on you. You obviously didn't pay attention at all. And Andy, you're just totally wrong.
Yeah, I know.
1.4 million.
I was closer, and I wasn't there to hear it.
I should be giving everybody a better, more credit.
Yeah. Okay, how about...
I'm thinking that includes out-of-state licenses.
And Hayes, this one was said many times. What's the approximate number of people they expect to be fishing on this... on the Saturday opener?
Where did you hear this stuff?
It was in literature. If you read any of your literature that they said, read this literature, it was in there.
You know, Dave, I don't read.
And then I'm trying to remember what speaker said it. What was your guess?
So how many people were fishing that weekend?
Yeah. What is the approximate number they expected to be out there on Saturday's fishing opener?
A million.
Andy?
480,000.
Well, Hayes, you obviously didn't pay attention. And Andy, at least your guess is pretty good. It's expecting 500,000. So if you were within the ballpark there.
Well, they were expecting, but due to the weather, about 20,000 stayed home.
Oh, actually, yeah. Listen to this. Okay.
That's, well, obviously, I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, shame on you. That's today's interesting
fact. There we go. That was a doozy of an interesting fact right there. All right. Hey,
Andy and Hayes, one other thing I want to mention, and I had this conversation with a person this morning. They were asking if we did a little radio show. And I said, well, yeah, it's called Northfield Outdoors. And she was telling me that her husband was just on the Kim Radio site and was looking at programs and came across Northfield Outdoors and just started to listen to all our little podcasts. So I want to remind people that those are all archived out there. And, just scroll through, find something that interests you. And
well, you must have also gone to the Facebook page because I kept getting notifications about one person liking this and liking that. So good. I'm glad we're gaining new listeners.
But I would encourage people to spread the word that if they want to go back and look at some of our or hear some of our shows. They are all out there.
Yeah. And I'd like to thank you guys. I know that it was a fun weekend, but I know you also put in some hard work out there. And
we were up early.
Yeah.
Yes, we were.
Well, good work. You got some good interviews. You had some fun. And
yes, we did.
And you caught a fish, kind of.
Yeah.
So.
Kind of. Yeah, I don't know if I'd call that a fish.
Yeah. We'd also like to remind you to tune in next weekend to On Tap with Corey and Ira and find out about beer. As always, beer's good.
Yeah, yes.
As always, the show will be archived on kymnradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. Hey, thank you, Hayes, for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page and keeping that growing.
Hayes does do a really good job of that.
Yeah.
My hats are off to you, man.
Yeah, man, it was fun. It was a lot of fun this weekend. And, not only check out the kymnradio.net site for the podcast or the recorded shows, but do take a look at the Facebook page because we do put a lot of stuff up there that doesn't get into the show, especially when we're out doing stuff. Dave and I have talked about this, and I think, Andy, I think you're on it, that if we're out doing an adventure, we're going to post some stuff about it to share with you the experience of what we're doing just to say, hey, this is what we learned in this adventure or this is what we learned on this trip kind of a thing because we want to help get the word out there and do it. And one thing I'm doing this weekend is we're going to put the dock in at the lake, and I'm going to take my son and daughter fishing, and I'm going to post some of that stuff.
Hey, that's going to be cold. I hope you got a wetsuit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thanks for reminding me. I got to bring my bibs.
Yeah, definitely.
Out to do that. But, yeah, check it out on the Facebook page and just see some of the stuff we've got there. It's a lot of fun.
We'd also like to thank Professional Pride Realty. And, Pete Mergens was a guest on our show and a big advocate for the outdoors. And
we got to get him back on again. Yeah. We'll talk a little trap shooting and stuff.
Yeah, sponsoring our show, keeping the lights on in the studio here. So thanks to Professional Pride Realty. And as always, Dave.
So until next time, get out there and enjoy the outdoors, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.